Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 147. Tom's still away. I am Leah, and we've got a carryover champion back again for the second time. Heath, how are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm back again. I'm just as excited as the first time, really.
Yeah, me too. We've been chatting about this for, about a week now, and most of what we say is just, I'm so looking forward to it.
Well, because we save the good stuff for the on-air time, like professionals.
That's right. But listen,
so, and this is my second time, so I'm glad to be back. Thank you for having me back. Sorry, Tom can't be here with us. But so I knew I was coming back. Like you said, we discussed it prior. And then I found out, I'm like, okay, cool. Found out what we're talking about. Maybe I won't be nervous this time. About an hour before we sat down to do this, the nerves started creeping in. I'm like, why am I nervous? I've done this.
Yeah, you've done this.
That's showbiz, kid.
The nerves just mean that it's you're getting excited. That's all it means.
For sure, excitement, a little, and some other things. But let's save that for the meat of the podcast, shall we?
Yeah, that sounds really good to me.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. The Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote impersonation day will see Big Ol' Highway close next Saturday from 10 till 4. If you do need to drive in or out of the town, please plan around those hours. Celia's Fancy Dress Shop has run out of both bird and all brown animal costumes, so your options are to make your own, or the store does have a few Anvil outfits left. The Watchersville Choir have been rehearsing their original Roadrunner song called Meep Meep, which they promised to sing over and over again for the full celebratory day. They'll also be selling singles if you want to keep a copy to listen to on repeat till the tape wears out. Trey Langhorne has been so inspired by the show Below Deck that he's been building his very own luxury yacht on the lake. He said once he's finished the construction, he'll then learn to sail it, then get rich customers to book holidays on it, then, or maybe at the same time, get a crew of bitchy influencers with no boating experience, and finally organise a production team to film the whole thing. What a great tourism initiative for the town. Nice one, Trey. The Guy Pearce Fan Club have started their rewatch of what they call the Mike Young years of Neighbours. If you're interested in joining them, let the club president Fiona know and she'll send you their watch party link. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
We will be focusing on some comfort watching. I think, 2020 is all about making yourself feel as good as you possibly can. And I think comfort watching is really important. So we'll crack into that a little bit later on. I've got a would you rather for you instead of a quiz, because I've been enjoying the would you rathers with all the special guests that have been on the past few weeks. And I think it's going to be fun with you.
I hope so.
But if not, we'll frown at each other.
All right.
But let's get into the news. The first one I think we both really want to talk about is the fact that, one, there's going to be a Madonna biopic. Two.
Ooh, getting right into the good stuff.
Yeah, let's go for it. Two, Madonna's going to direct it. And thirdly, she's writing it or co-writing it with Diablo Cody, who wrote the movie Juno. She wrote a heap of the episodes of United States of Tara, a whole lot of stuff. What do you think about this?
Well, I'm glad you asked. No, I am glad you asked, because so this goes back, and I think we talked about this on the last episode about the celebrity biopics, because we were talking about, what the Queen one had just come out, and then the Elton John one had come out. Remember we discussed this?
Yeah.
So, this is like part two of that conversation. So we may have mentioned briefly that I was excited for Madonna to do one because she's getting to that point in her career. And I'm really excited about this one because me personally, as an Alanis Morissette fan, which I love her and she's my favorite. So she just recently did the Jagged Little Pill musical with Diablo Cody.
That's where I knew the name from. Thank you for that connection. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that, even though Alanis and Madonna don't really cross paths anymore. I think that she was probably inspired by the great success that that was before COVID shut everything down. Because Diablo Cody, from what I've seen and read and watched by her, she's such a talented, like, gifted writer.
And so, who appears to be able to do a whole heap of really different, diverse kind of, I was going to say writings, but, you know, movies, scripts, that kind of thing.
Everything she does just seems edgy. Mm. You know, she did Juno, which was like teen pregnancy. So that's kind of, so I can totally see it for Madonna, because she's always trying to push the envelope and she's always trying to be a little bit edgy and get people to pay attention. So I'm excited about those two working together, because I didn't get a chance to see the Jagged Little Pill musical, but I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Now, we have friends who go and see a lot of musicals, and I also know that they're big Alanis Morissette fans. I wonder if I can't remember if any of them actually got a chance to go and check it out. I don't know what it was like.
I know a few people who have gone, and it's really good. I think there's parts of it now that you can catch on YouTube, just since everything, since COVID happened and all the theaters went dark. But that's kind of spoiler. I would like, in a perfect world, everything's going to heal back up nicely and the Broadway shows are going to come back.
Yeah.
And when I first, you know, I follow Madonna on Instagram.
Me too.
And she tries to be active. Oh, that's good. So she tries to be active, and she's been posting a lot of videos just writing with Diablo Cody for a while leading up to today, but she never really said what it was for. She didn't confirm anything. It was kind of secretive. So I think she even went live yesterday about it, and then it finally came out today that it is a biopic. And I think people have asked her in the past in different interviews, they said, you know, if you do a biopic, who's going to write it? And she said, well, I am. So it's really not a surprise that she's, you know, so involved in it and that she's still alive while it's happening. I think that's awesome.
When I heard the news, I thought it couldn't have been any other way. This is so Madonna, in that, you know, she is so involved. She takes control of everything that she does. So this for me is the only way that this would ever get made.
Well, yeah. And I mean, there's been other kind of documentary. There was one called The Breakfast Club that came out. I think it was like a direct-to-video release. It was well done. And it was by, she used to be in this band in the early 80s called The Breakfast Club. Hmm. And so there was, I think it was done by her band members from that era. And so it was like semi-official, you know, they had pictures and different, you know, unseen things, previously unreleased items. But yeah, so that one was, it was good. And there's going to be plenty. There's going to be plenty of opportunities. She's like a mega famous star. They don't even make stars like that anymore.
No, they don't.
And she's like an old Hollywood star, but she's still kind of relevant. But she's now in the twilight segment of her career, so she can kind of just look back and honor everything that she's done. And there's going to be plenty of people who want to do a biopic about Madonna. I mean, I'm sure there have been. They just can't do it with permission.
Yeah,
and that's fine. Sure. I think they should go ahead and do it, just like the Breakfast Club thing. And this is the one that I want to see, though. This is, like you said, this is the only way that I pictured it done, and this is the one I'm really excited about, because she's crazy.
I know,
you
know, she's crazy. Crazy.
She's
been
famous forever, and not just famous, like mega famous. She's a pioneer in so many things, like, you know, paparazzi, music videos, just all different kinds of things. That stuff goes to your head. Mm. It's hard.
So she's what? How old is she now? Like 62, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah, I think she's 62.
Let's say she was early 20s. She's been famous for like 2/3 of her life now.
She's been famous for a long time. Mm. And she lived a considerably full life prior to being famous as well. She has a lot of interesting stories about, you know, her early career as a dancer. So that's even fascinating.
This is the question, and I've already got my answer, but who do you reckon she's going to want to cast as Madonna?
Only because she can't actually play herself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the only reason why there's
that's a really good question. So I thought about it. Like, there's been some Madonna impersonators over time, and I tried to kind of think about who they were. I remember when I was really young, because she came out right as I was born. I was born in 1984. And so she's, for me personally, she's like the ultimate icon pop star goddess, because she's just been around. Like she's her whole career has been my life. But so yeah, she came out in the 80s, and I remember, is it Judy Tenuta or something? Judy Tenuta. She used to do kind of like a Madonna spoof character, but she's around the same age as Madonna, so she wouldn't be able to play young Madonna.
She wouldn't be able to play young Madonna.
But I've seen a lot of stuff. I've seen a lot of stuff online about the girl from Ozarks. The Netflix series Ozarks.
Yeah, right. I've seen her interviewed, and she seems to be pretty good at doing impersonations and stuff.
Does she? And she does kind of look like a young, I mean, she has the platinum blonde hair, the blonde hair and stuff. Yeah, so she'd probably be good. A lot of people say Paris Jackson reminds them of Madonna visually because she's bleached her hair.
Really? See, that's Michael Jackson's daughter.
Michael Jackson's daughter. Yeah, isn't that kind of funny that she would resemble Madonna? But
Paris Jackson, well, I kind of like that idea.
Me personally, I would like to see Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus would be good. We know that she's done some acting. For me, I think it's almost a no-brainer that Madonna's going to try and push for her daughter, Lourdes, to be cast as her. I mean, she looks a lot like her.
Well, I got to see the Madame X tour, which I feel really... I'm really proud of that because, you know, she hurt herself. So who knows what her next tour is going to be. Mm. But it was an amazing onstage tour that she put together. And during the song Frozen, she did this huge, like the whole stage was set up with this screen and it had her daughter Lourdes on it. And it was beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. It was unexpected. Mm. It was really raw and it was just so cool. And so I think you're onto something. But I don't think, I hear that Lourdes is kind of detached from the, I guess, entertainment world, not so much Hollywood world. I hear that the Kardashian, the Jenner ones, they reach out to her and they want to hang out and chill together, but she says no, she shoots them down. I'm not sure that she wants to be in the spotlight as an actress.
I have this vague recollection of her going to some sort of art school, and I wondered if maybe it was more of a creative arts and maybe she did do some sort of acting or dancing. But yeah, maybe she's into other stuff.
She's a dancer. She does modeling. I don't know about. And the thing is if you're a super fan like me, you've watched YouTube interviews or just different things. Lourdes in it, and she's mannerism wise, and just she's a different person than Madonna. She's got a deeper voice. Mm. She's taller. Mm. She's got a different shape. She's just different than Madonna. Now her face looks like Madonna, and I love her. I think she'd be awesome in a movie. There's so many good options. I just can't wait. And I like the fact, here we go again, that Madonna is doing it herself because she really gets to choose. So it's going to be her choice. I like that.
Well, I kind of like, the more I'm thinking about that Ozark, I think that.
The Ozark.
I think there's something in that. Maybe we should let her know, Madonna.
Julia Garner. And she plays Ruth on Ozark. And her name's Julia Garner. And so I've seen a few things floating around about her doing it. So the girl who I couldn't think of her name earlier, but it's Jamie Auld, and that's who played her in the Breakfast Club biopic. Madonna, that's who played Madonna. And she looks a lot like her, and I thought she did a really good job. So I would also like to see her in it. That's it.
Not to be confused with Jamie Oliver, because he, of course, would only be able to cook. It wouldn't work.
I don't know if Madonna can cook.
Surely she doesn't have to, right?
Madonna had a favorite meal to cook. It'd be something Italian, right? She's Italian, so it'd be like spaghetti and meatballs, maybe. No, because she's probably vegetarian.
I reckon it'd have to be super like healthy as well, because she's very fit.
Yeah, and she's in the Kabbalah, so it'd have to be something like, what do they call it? Is it kosher? No, that's not.
Something like that. Yeah.
It has to be something blessed by a rabbi.
Yes, that's right. Maybe she's got one on call 24/7. Yeah, the biopic, very interesting. Obviously, very early days because they're only just writing the script now, but definitely one to keep an eye out for.
For a visual representation of this audio, check out the Watchers podcast on Instagram.
Let's get into stuff that is already, well, I was going to say already out, about to be out. There's been a couple of trailers that have been released that have grabbed our attention. I think first we should probably get into The Mandalorian Season 2 trailer. It wasn't very long. I think it was about 30 seconds, but it's just exciting that we're going to get some new Star Wars-y stuff that fans are on board with.
Yes, yes, and yes. So as soon as you said that, you know that meme online? Or I guess it's a GIF. I don't know how you say it. GIF. GIF, and it's Shaquille O'Neal and he's sitting there and he has a big smile on his face and he's just shifting and shaking. That's exactly how I was when he brought up The Mandalorian, because I watched the trailer and it's just so, I'm not by any means like Star Wars or a Trekkie. I'm into the sci-fi world, but not, I'm not a fangirl about it.
Yeah, right.
But The Mandalorian, there's just something about the way it's done. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the technology. I don't know. I just love thinking of the director. He was on Friends.
Favreau. Yeah, yeah.
Jon Favreau.
I love that you know he was on Friends as well. That's my initial reference point of him.
Yeah, well, I'm an 80s, 90s baby, so that's always going to be the best of his Friends. And Friends is in syndication still on almost every channel here, so everybody should know who that is. But he does a really good job storytelling, and I read it like a piece or an article or something about it. And he said it's a 2020 version of kind of like an old West or an old Western, you know, retro show like my parents would watch. And I don't know if they had those where you grew up, but here they did like Bonanza. There was Rawhide. There was just a bunch of them. And when I read that, it really resonated with me. And I was like, that's it. That's what it is. I grew up, my parents watching stuff like this. It's storytelling in a classic way, but with all this futuristic and amazing, you know, next level stuff. And it's Disney, who has just a $1 billion to do any kind of thing they want. And
just throw it.
The effects are so cool. The storytelling is just right. I mean, I don't know how anyone could not be hooked, even if you don't like Star Wars. Just it takes one look, and I think you should be hooked on The Mandalorian. That's all it took for me with this trailer. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. And I agree about the cowboy Western sort of thing. The storytelling's very much that, but also the theme music, it sounds like it should be a 1960s Western theme. I love it. I love the theme so much.
Yeah, I can't get enough. And I'm not usually like that, but it's something that I'm really excited about. And it's one of the few things that I'll actually take the time out to sit and binge watch if I can.
Yeah, well, it's coming out in October, so we don't have very long to go. Because it kind of feels like we've had this big opportunity to catch up on stuff over the past probably 6 months now. But there is a few things that are coming out that have really got a lot of people super excited.
That's one of them for sure. Yeah. I see a lot of buzz about it online. Oh. A lot of excitement. They're doing it right. Whatever they're doing it right. We want more.
We want more. What I found weird was that they were setting up this thing about you've got to take the kid back to, you know, his people or its people. We still don't really know the gender, I guess, but back to the Jedi. And it was the way they were talking about it was if it was some sort of mystical, magical, mythical people called Jedis. But how long is it's like 5 to 25 years after Return of the Jedi. Although I guess the Jedis had been for us the, you know, the original movies, the Skywalkers, those kind of things. They were all about the Jedi. But I guess in terms of the storyline chronologically, those original three movies, the Jedi had kind of gone by then. So maybe it is true that the people in the Mandalorian time frame don't really remember much about the Jedi. So it's going to be interesting how they play that out for us, because I wonder if they will reference any Skywalker stuff.
I think the thing with the sequel, first of all, I got to say, gender reveal of the baby, the child. You said they haven't revealed his gender yet, which is funny.
I'm just guessing.
Well, gender reveals are such a touchy subject right now because, you know, there's the California wildfires that are going on right now in the U.S. were started by a gender reveal.
That's horrendous. That's horrendous.
I know it's horrible, but it just made me think of gender reveal.
Yeah, and yeah.
Is that going to be the season premiere, the gender reveal of the child?
And everyone's like, no, you've got to re-edit.
But yeah, for sure. Let's do a whole new premiere on that one. Yeah. But back on topic, I'm not the biggest Star Wars universe fanatic, but the timeline, I just recently, even though I said I was an 80s and 90s baby, I grew up around those movies and having seen bits and pieces throughout my childhood, but I never really watched them until I recently got Disney Plus. So I'm pretty much all caught up.
Awesome.
I think the final movie that just came out and it like just hit Disney Plus not that long ago.
Yeah.
Like the last of the series. I haven't seen that one yet, but from what I read and heard about this is that they were trying to pretty much put the final nail in the coffin of the Skywalker series and, you know, the Skywalker storyline.
Yep.
So that being said, with that and we don't have the gender of the baby, which we think is Yoda, I don't think it has to be on the same timeline because we don't officially know that that's Yoda. You know, that could be Yoda's great grandfather, or, you know, we don't really know.
Look, so, I'm sure it's not Yoda. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it is from the land of Yodarian.
Right.
But I don't remember. So in the, because you've seen them recently. So in the prequels where, you know, they had the council and there'd be all these pods full of people from all over the galaxy. Were there any Yodas?
And it's very confusing.
Yes.
Just for the listeners, just in case there's anyone like me. So I'll break it down since it's like a Star Wars for dummies. I'm the dummy, so I'll break it down in case anybody else doesn't know. The prequels are let's see, they are the beginning of the series.
Yeah, so they're chronologically.
Okay. So chronologically, yeah. The prequels start off the whole Skywalker saga. So that's where we're at. We're talking about those prequels, which actually came out after the original movies. But back to those. I saw the episode where he goes before the, what was it?
The council or whatever, yeah.
The council. And what were you saying about that?
Were there any other Yoda-like creatures in any of the other, in any of the films, particularly the prequels? I don't remember. So this potentially are the only two Yoda-type creatures that we've ever seen in the galaxy. So,
and that's a really, you make a really good point because as somebody who hadn't seen the Star Wars movies except bits and pieces in the 80s and 90s and growing up,
yeah,
I specifically wanted to watch them because of The Mandalorian. So after having finished The Mandalorian, I'm watching these movies.
Yeah,
and
right.
That was one thing that I did look for is there any other Yoda characters? Because I want to know who this kid is. I think it's so awesome that they used this character in this way to kind of tie the two series together, but that the timeline and the whole references don't necessarily match up perfectly. I love that. Agreed.
There's a lot of mystery behind it, but I'm sure we'll find out only a little bit more during season two, but we'll definitely find out more.
Searching for felines near Melmac? You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
There was another trailer that looked really good for a movie called Love and Monsters. This looked fun.
You introduced this to me because I hadn't seen the trailer for this. And the first thing that came to my mind was Lana Del Rey. You know Lana Del Rey?
Yeah.
She's the movie sounds like a Lana Del Rey song or maybe an album. Okay. Can't you just hear it?
Yeah.
Love and Monsters. I don't know. You know.
Maybe she's in the soundtrack. I'm not sure.
Sings, but it's just so. First of all, I have to say, I love the title. That's what it got me thinking about. I love that. Love and Monsters. And it really does
now that you mention it.
It really does. But it's not a metaphorical monster. It's actually, we're talking about real monsters in the movie, which is even more exciting because it's not a Charlize Theron type.
Mm-mm. Oh, not at all. Don't go into this thinking you're going to see that. No, it's like an apocalypse, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of like the end of the world apocalypse monsters. And it looks so exciting and so good.
And funny.
It looks funny. The only thing that was kind of a red flag for me, and it could be just because I'm old and detached from society these days, I'm in my golden years. And I don't recognize any of the actors or actresses in it. Do you?
I recognize two. I recognize the main star. He is Dylan O'Brien. He was Thomas in the Maze Runner movies. And I recognize Michael Rooker mainly because, you know, I love The Walking Dead and he was in the first few seasons of The Walking Dead. He was Merle. But he's also been in Guardians of the Galaxy, but you probably didn't recognize him because he was all in blue in that. But at first I thought he was Woody Harrelson. It looks like he's kind of playing that kind of Woody Harrelson Zombieland kind of character.
From Zombieland.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought too. That's what came to my mind too. But then as I looked and I realized that it wasn't Woody Harrelson, that was my next question is, well, who are these actors?
Yeah, who are these people?
That's when I felt really
old. I demand to know. So it's premiering at home, they said, on the 16th of August. So October, I should say. So not far. You can, you know, pick it up on Amazon or Apple, you know, all those kind of places. So it's not streaming.
Oh, so it's a, it's a direct to streaming movie then. It's not going to be in theaters.
Yeah, it's not. It's not in theaters, and it's not on Netflix or anything like that. You have to go and.
I have to say about that. I understand we're in the middle of a pandemic still, whatever. But it is a little disappointing because the one thing about this movie, and not all movies are like this, but this movie in particular looks like it would be a lot of fun to go see in a dark, scary theater with a bunch of people around you and getting that reaction from the audience.
People laughing, shock, being scared. Yeah, I agree with you. I kind of hope that once things are way more safe, that a lot of these films will end up in cinemas so that we can go and get that proper movie theater experience.
That would be cool.
We'll see. There are a lot of movie theaters that like to do retro movies, so I can imagine them doing retro as in, 6 months ago movies.
I love retro. That's one of my favorite words now, retro.
Yeah, because then it doesn't sound like you're really old. It just it means
it doesn't sound cool. Old. It sounds cool. Retro,
yeah, super cool.
So speaking of retro, though, do you have drive-in? Probably a silly question. Forgive me, listeners, if it's a stupid question, but do you have drive-in movie theaters in Australia? I've never been.
Well, we do, but I've never been to one, and they're definitely pretty rare at least around where I am. I've heard they're popping up a bit more in the US though at the moment, which sounds like a really fun idea. Have you been to one?
The thing is that their drive-in movies are like a classic, maybe 1950s or 60s thing.
Yeah.
So they were really popular in the US for a while, but they went away because I think malls came, everybody, let's go to the mall.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Totally. but anyway, we have one here in Las Vegas where I live, and they're actually doing movies right now, and it's, it's awesome.
It's a good idea.
And yeah, it's a great idea. I think that maybe that's the next thing for movies is that drive-ins, maybe drive-ins will become more popular. And if they do, I think that would be a really good spot to kind of showcase what you're talking about and maybe do some retro. There's that word again.
Yep.
That should be our word of the day, our retro.
That's right.
Every time we say retro, if you're listening to this, take a shot of something. Be coffee, okay, whatever. Just take a shot. Retro is the secret.
Yeah.
So
I love it.
Yeah. But have like a re-release of some of these movies that didn't get a proper release, like Mulan.
That's right. They held off from that for a while, but it's on Disney Plus now. I think you're calling it premium content or something, which means you have to pay more, which is fine, They got to make their money somehow.
$30, and people are saying, well, that'd be the price if you took your family to the theater, but for individuals, $30 can be a lot if you just want to sit down and watch a movie.
Good point. Another trailer we saw today will be on Netflix, November 25th, The Christmas Chronicles 2. Like, I remember watching the first one with Kurt Russell as Santa and just thinking, I never expected him to be Santa, and he's absolutely perfect.
Well, Kurt Russell is such a strikingly, classically handsome, good-looking man, and he has those striking blue eyes.
Yep.
And his face is very serious. You don't really think of him as a comedic actor.
No.
Even though I don't think he's strictly like a serious actor, but it was kind of weird for me to see him in a Christmas movie. How did you feel? How do you feel when iconic, classic, retro, there it is again. How do you feel about that when these kind of stars are kind of now in 2020, I guess?
Of an
age. I guess
age.
Times are different. But back in the old days, for a big movie star, Hollywood movie star, to do a project on TV, or I guess kind of like what we call streaming services now, like Netflix, was a step down in their career.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I realized that times are changing, that he's older now. And I think Goldie Hawn had a movie in theaters not that long ago with Amy Schumer.
Oh, that's right.
Do you feel like this is a step down for these quality actors? Because, they've both done a lot of amazing work. Goldie Hawn's hilarious. She's done serious work. Do you think it's weird that they're in a Santa Claus movie?
Look, just a quick side note. Apparently her Instagram is filled with joy to follow. I might follow her as soon as we finish recording this, because they apparently have kitchen wash up dancing time as a family. It just sounds really, really fun. They just sound like awesome people. But yeah, I think if it was 10 years ago, I would probably think it was weird and seen as a step down. But there's so many movie, like, in, you know, put that in quotes, movie stars now that do a lot of streaming stuff and also do a lot of TV shows. I mean, you think about, I immediately go to something like Big Little Lies. Look at how many not only Hollywood movie A-list actresses were in there, but Oscar-winning actresses were in that show. I was going to say limited series, but they did two seasons. Like, I think it's those walls, or at least those conceived ideas, have been broken down a bit. And
those boundaries.
Yeah. I kind of think that for movie actors who will do a movie for, you know, a 2-hour movie where they tell that story and they're that character for that long, I reckon doing like an 8 to 10 episode season of something where they get to really explore this character, I think that would be really rewarding for an actor.
So you don't mind it? You're happy?
I don't mind it.
You're glad to see him on the screen. You're glad to see more.
More. I want to see more of them do more. Yeah.
And you're probably right. It has, without being bougie or snobby or boys clubby or girls clubby, it probably has changed a bit from, you know, from the olden days. And they're probably glad to be working and they're probably excited about this project. And there's probably a lot more projects for, you know, veteran actors or retro actors who are in a different age category than they were notoriously famous for. So I don't know. It's a good thing. And I'll probably watch it.
I love those actors
and actresses, but it's just, I don't know.
You just feel a bit uneasy about it.
I grew up in the 80s and he just was a movie star. And so was she. I see them as movie stars. So for them to be in this kind of kids Santa movie,
fair.
I don't know how I feel.
That's fair. This was a story that I got super excited about a couple of days ago when I saw it, because I love Nicole Byer, because I love the show Nailed It. I think that show is so much fun to watch. But she is going to be hosting the new revival of Wipeout, the TV show Wipeout, with, get this, John Cena. That's a pairing I never expected to see.
Wipeout. Unfortunately, well, I know both of the people you are talking about, so I feel good about that pop culture wise.
Good.
But I'm not a big fan of either one. I haven't seen Nailed It. I don't really follow wrestling or John Cena. I mean, I know who both of them are. And now that you've mentioned it, I'll probably give it a chance. But it's not something that really, I'm not about to wet myself with excitement over that one. I have to be honest.
wet yourself for Wipeout. Oh, what?
Well, yeah. I mean, as much as it was to say Wipeout, that was basically it. Yeah.
Yeah.
John
okay.
Cena's cool. He's been in some movies and stuff. It's cool.
I'm excited to see how they go co-pairing. I'd imagine this is what I think it's going to be. Nicole Byer's going to do all the intro, outro kind of stuff and be funny. And then maybe John Cena will talk more to the athletes participating. That's my guess.
Yeah, kind of like A-roll and B-roll hosts.
That's right.
I guess.
It's a pairing though, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about co-hosting when it comes to TV shows. It doesn't often work. Like, I remember the first season of American Idol, they had Ryan Seacrest.
And
somebody else.
A bloke, yeah.
They got rid of him. And then I remember X Factor, when that was in the USA, they had, I think, Mario Lopez and one of the Kardashians was a host.
Really?
I don't know about dual hosting gigs, except for morning shows. So, I mean, I think you're right. They're going to have to segregate them a little bit. He's going to be kind of in charge of his portion of the show and her. I don't think they're going to be playing off of each other like Regis and Kathy Lee.
Or insert some
newer reference if that's too old. I don't think either one of those people are on TV anymore.
No. Paul Regis passed away a few months ago, so.
That's very sad. He was very prevalent in American television.
For years, right?
For years, yeah. And he's just really, he's a likable guy.
So, yeah, keep your eye out, or both of them, I should say, for Wipeout.
Wipeout.
Coming to TBS in the US.
Acme's number two customers, right behind Wile E. Coyote. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Let's go to England right now. The Irishman, which is a movie I haven't seen because it's about 45 days long and I just can't. So Stephen Graham was in that. Sean Bean, who was Ed Stark in Game of Thrones, and he's been in a whole heap of stuff. But they're reuniting to do a prison drama for the BBC from the Cracker creator. Now, I have vague recollections of the TV show Cracker. Now, Robbie Robbie Coltrane.
Robbie Coltrane plays Hagrid, the giant in Harry Potter series.
Yeah, so he played Cracker in a detective show for years over in the UK. It was very popular. I remember my mum loving it. Anyway, so this is from the creator of that show, and they'll be doing a miniseries. Now, miniseries are like a three-parter, right? But they're also things now called limited series where they're like, nah, we're only doing one season of this. So it's very confusing, all the different names that you get for lengths of TV shows and whatnot. But my question is, like, Sean Bean is so famous for being in TV shows or movies where he dies really quickly. Is he going to die in this show? I'm wondering. Well, only time will tell.
It depends on how much money it makes.
Yeah, that's true.
He might want to do another limited series and then kill him off.
He might be the ghost of. It's called Accused, so look out for it. They're both. So one plays a guy who's in prison, and the other is a prison guard. And I assume stuff will happen. So interesting.
Stuff happens.
Stuff.
Stuff happens in prison. That's what I've heard.
I've heard that
I've
too.
Been.
No, not same. Yet. No.
That's what a lot of stuff happens. So all in all, this sounds fascinating. I'm much more on board with this than why. And that's a big statement because there's very few BBC things that I actually get into.
Do you think it's maybe because it is a mini series, so it's not a huge investment at the moment. So for you, it could just be like a contained story that is really good and then you're out?
Yeah, I love a miniseries. I mean, it's just so much less threatening when you go to watch it than there's 8 seasons of this new show that you're interested in, you know? It just feels so daunting.
Yeah.
But with a miniseries, it's just like, oh, this is good and I get to watch another one. It's like the gift that keeps giving until it stops. And then you're like, well, it was a limited series, so that's fine.
And if you want to get in with like the zeitgeist and talk about it, if everybody else is, if it's a runaway success, then you've only got 3 episodes to watch, so you don't get left behind. Yeah. That's not going to be out for ages, though, because we're only just talking about it. I want to talk about a Netflix movie that was filmed during the pandemic.
Yes, I read about this
one. This one's interesting. It's called Malcolm and Marie, and it was filmed because of the pandemic, because the director and the actress, Zendaya, and the director, Sam Levinson, they both work on Euphoria, and they were like, well, we can't make Euphoria right now. Do you want to make like a low-budget movie? I say low-budget, but for, you know, whatever. It's in black and white.
No budget.
Yeah, a budget. It's a budget movie.
It's not a blockbuster.
That's right. So they got John David Washington from, of course, like the movie at the moment, Tenet, and they filmed it. It's like a 35mm black and white film. It's like a romantic drama. And I just think it's really interesting because Netflix has gotten this film, but it looks like a lot of other companies and streaming services really wanted it as well. I was looking at the list, like HBO, Amazon, Searchlight, MGM, Apple, A24, Focus Features, like big names.
This one is coming in hot. I mean, it's got some serious potential behind it, and they're excited. As far as Netflix goes, they've had a few hits, but I think they did a documentary series with Zac Efron that had pretty big ratings. I know they get good ratings on comedy stars. So they're kind of in this league of their own, and they can just do whatever they want. And Netflix is really exciting. So they're going to get this movie. And now Zendaya, again, I'm old. So Zendaya, what did I see her in? I saw her, the Greatest Show.
Yeah.
The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
The Greatest Showman. That's
with
what it was.
With Hugh Jackman.
So Zendaya,
yep.
Now, give me a quick 411 on her, because what is she? Is she a Disney star, or what's her thing?
Sort of. She's been in the latest Spider-Man movies. She's been in Euphoria for HBO, which has been nominated for a whole heap of Emmys, I think. And then I'm pretty sure the Showman was before those two, though, if I can recall the timeline correctly.
She, according to Google and Zendaya.com. Mm. She is an actress, a singer, a model, a backup dancer.
Oh.
Okay, so, and she did something with Disney, and we don't need to get into that because I feel like every young actress these days come from Disney. So we don't have that much time on this podcast. But so that's how we know her. I saw her in The Greatest Showman. She's good. I mean, I think she's a talented actress. She's definitely a beautiful girl. And now the star of the other star, or did you say the person making the movie?
Well, John David Washington is he?
Okay, John David Washington.
Yeah, he was in Tenet, or is in Tenet, I should say. So, I mean,
now what is Tenet? Because I'm totally out of loop on this. Okay, here he is, John David Washington. He's an American former football running back. Okay, so it's between him and Zendaya. Okay.
Yeah, it's the two of them starring as a couple, I believe. He plays a filmmaker who returns home with his girlfriend following a celebratory movie premiere as he awaits what is sure to be imminent critical and financial success. And then the evening suddenly takes a turn as revelations about their relationship begins to surface, testing the strength of their love. It's got a touch of Wedding Story, you know, the Scarlett Johansson and Adam, what's his face from Star Wars. It's got a bit of that vibe to me.
I'm sorry, listeners, if you already caught up, I'm Special Ed over here, so I got to ask one more question. I got to get into this universe really quick because, all right, so there's two people. This film was made because of quarantine. There's two people. Now, did the stars film it themselves?
No. The Euphoria director, Sam Levinson, did. And so he's the one that worked with Zendaya in Euphoria. So there was obviously a quarantined cast and crew, very small cast and crew.
Which is now how, I'm starting to get the idea.
Yeah, which is how a lot of places are doing it now.
In my mind, all I could picture was Brittany and Kevin Federline chaotic, the UPN miniseries where it's like Brittany's on her phone filming both of them. Wow. She's like, I love you. And he's like, I love you too, baby.
Oh my God, that'd be so good.
Because you could have totally done that in quarantine times. It's a cell phone to two people.
That's right.
So that's what I was thinking. It was because you said low budget, and it's not low budget. And you said that. It's not low budget, but it's something that we really aren't used to seeing, I guess. Maybe they filmed it on an iPhone.
They definitely filmed it on 35mm black and white. But what I love is that like it if they had filmed it on 35mm black and white, but they pretended that it was a mobile phone, just like a selfie.
I know that sounds random. But there's I'm thinking of a Lady Gaga video. There's a Lady Gaga video that they shot, I think, on an iPhone or something. And I thought maybe that was a new Hollywood trend going on, especially with quarantine. I've seen a lot of like different techniques being used. But I'm excited. It sounds cool. It sounds good.
It sounds like definitely like a passion project, but a passion project that a lot of people have watched and are really interested in. So I suspect this is going to be a bit of a award season contender.
It's going to be an award favorite.
Yeah, I think it might
be. Look out.
Yeah, also because there's only three movies out at the moment. So.
Well, based on the bidding war that you mentioned before with all the different Netflix and HBO and all the different kind of services and stations and channels and whatnot. I don't know what you call those companies, all the different companies wanting this project. It's gotta be a good one.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I think that's more than enough news for now. We'll have a Would You Rather coming up very soon, but we want to talk about some stuff that we've watched, but some comfort stuff that we've been watching. Heath, seeing you are the guest, what have you been watching?
I've said this about three or four times during this podcast, but I'm an 80s, 90s baby, and I say 80s, 90s because it's 1984. So, right?
Yeah, that counts, for sure.
MTV, all these cool things were coming out, a lot of media, but I'm just kind of stuck when it goes to comfort to those things that I grew up with.
I don't think you're the only one.
I watch a lot of Saved by the Bell.
Oh yeah. Are you watching that ahead of the new Saved by the Bell, or are you just watching it because you love it?
Well, funny you should mention that. I really don't need an excuse to watch Saved by the Bell. It's a guilty pleasure that I am proud of. Yeah. I will allow myself to participate in. But I have every season on DVD. But ever since streaming services came out, I haven't used the DVDs. And I just occasionally, just for comfort, you know, if I want to watch something where I don't have to focus too hard and know the characters and I don't have to think too hard, it's going to be Saved by the Bell. It just feels comforting to me totally, because that's what I grew up watching. That's like my big entrance into the television world as a kid on Saturday mornings watching Saved by the Bell. So I love it. And the fact that they're doing the spinoff is awesome.
It's got you? Okay.
It's got me for sure. We talked about this in the last podcast as well. 2020 is the year of rebooting
and
paying homage to the 90s. And yeah, so that's coming out. And funny, you should mention it. There's another podcast I listen to called Zach to the Future. And Mark Paul Gosselaar, who played Zach on Saved by the Bell, for those of you who don't know, that's the main character. Yeah. It's an ensemble cast, but the show was really all about Zach.
Yeah.
Anyway, he sits down with a writer from Funny or Die, who previously did a web series for Funny or Die called Zach Morris's Trash. And so it's satirical. He didn't actually think Zach Morris is trash, but he just went back and kind of looked over old Saved by the Bell episodes and different moral dilemmas that the 80s and 90s sitcoms would kind of put us through as viewers. And he picked it apart and kind of made it a 2020 version of what was happening. And at the end of each episode, Zach Morris was pretty trashy. the kind of stuff that he did. So if you haven't seen it,
Evidence suggested.
Tongue in cheek. It's not meant to be serious. The guy's a fan. Yeah. His name is Dashiell. But Dashiell, because he did that series, is now one of the writers on the new Saved by the Bell.
No way.
And separately, he's podcasting with Mark Paul Gosselaar, who played Zach on
That's
the show.
Amazing.
And they run a podcast, like I said, called Zach to the Future. And I've been listening to a lot of that. So that's kind of the companion podcast with the show. In fact, on the podcast, sometimes they watch the show while they podcast. So for me, it's been about revisiting Saved by the Bell because of the podcast, and also in anticipation for the brand new Saved by the Bell that's coming out, which I'm really excited about. I've heard rumors.
It feels like the podcast was almost handmade just for you, tailor-made.
It was. As far as I'm concerned.
Now, you heard rumors about the new series?
I've heard rumors. Yeah, there's been some rumors floating around online about who's coming back, who's doing what. And I don't know. I'm just going to wait and see, because it's one of my favorite shows. It's one of my comfort shows. And whatever they do, I'm going to be happy with. I'm not one of those fans who's a hater and who's going to write in and say, oh, I'm so unhappy with what you did here. I'm just going to enjoy it because it's iconic. It's retro. And it's one of my definite comfort shows. And just to piggyback on that before, because I want to ask you the same question, because I think all listeners are really dying to hear. But just to piggyback on the Saved by the Bell, I love 90s American sitcoms like Family Matters and 80s American sitcoms like Who's the Boss? You know, those are like my go-to comfort television. As far as movies, it would probably be the same 80s and 90s movies. But let's get to the real question here.
Okay.
And what is what have you been waiting to tell us about? What have you been denying and hiding all these years, and now you finally get to announce your secret comfort series, so all of us get to know and we can kind of jump inside your skin for a day and say, you know, what would Leah do? Leah watch?
I'm not actually sure it's a secret, but when you were talking about the fact that, you know, you had all the seasons of Saved by the Bell on DVD and you haven't watched them recently because there's so much to watch on streaming, and it immediately made me think of the fact that I continuously have intentions of watching my Beverly Hills 90210 DVDs and my you may not know this show, but because it's from England, but Press Gang DVDs as well, and I haven't gotten to them yet because there's just so much going on. But for me, even just the thought of sitting down and watching those DVDs gives me comfort. But I have found a new comfort show. Well, a new comfort show for me, at least. It's from the UK. It's on Netflix here in Australia. I'm not sure about the US. You'd have to check it out. But it's a show called Detectorists. They are metal detectorists, like hobby. It's their hobby. It's by Mackenzie Cook, who was Gareth in the UK office. It also has Toby Jones in it as well. And it's just like this super chill show where nothing really happens that is that important. It's just one of those, like, these two guys go out into English farms or, you know, like paddocks or whatever you call them. They just look they're continuously looking for treasures, and all they ever end up finding are matchbox cars or like a can of Coke or that kind of thing. And it's funny, and it's got that kind of, you know, that quirky small town ensemble cast that a lot of those kind of, they're not like dramedies, but they're a bit funny, but they're also not like sitcom-y, if you know what I mean, but they're just like cozy laughter. And they've got that quirky ensemble cast in there as well. And I've been enjoying it. There's only 3 seasons. I'm halfway through the second one. I think it wrapped up about 2017. So it's been an undiscovered gem for me at the moment. It's exactly what I wanted to watch at this particular point in time.
See, there it is.
That's it?
And that's the episode. Cut. But I just want to say, I love being here as a guest on the Watchers podcast, but this is one of the main reasons that I like to tune in as a listener.
Yeah.
Because The Detectorist, I'm looking at it now, I had to Google it because I hadn't heard of it.
But that's my point.
You and Tom pull some stuff from outer space and bring it down here. Cause some of this stuff, I just feel so out of touch. You say it has 3 seasons. I have never heard of it, but it looks amazing.
It's so relaxing, Heath. I cannot tell you. I've been watching a couple of episodes a night, you know, just before bed, and it's just like, yeah, this is really nice. And it's nice to see Mackenzie Crook play a different kind of character than, Mackenzie Crook. I keep saying his name incorrectly, but to watch him play a character that isn't the annoying guy in The Office, you know, to play a guy that's a bit different, a bit more rounded and real. Yeah, it's great. If you can find it, Heath, check it out.
I want to. And so just one more thing, because I love The Office. So his character then for the American version would be the Dwight.
Yeah, it's version. Dwight. That's exactly, okay. Yeah. The UK version, his name was Gareth, and Dwight in the US, it's the exact same character, like as annoying as you can possibly get. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. He was also in Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, you'd know him. He's got his real character actor face, yeah.
You can never have enough hats, gloves, shoes, and we are the Watchers, sweetie darling.
What else have you been watching?
I think I do know him.
Yeah, sorry, you know him. You know him.
I know him. Yeah, I think I saw him in Ever After with Drew Barrymore. Seems like he played one of the scenes opposite Angelica Houston in that. I could be wrong.
Oh, I have to check that out. Yeah.
I think that was him. Anyway, so for comfort. So, when I'm talking about TV, TV's easy just because it's easy to digest in, you know, 20-minute episodes.
Agreed.
But for movies, I want to talk about movies because that's such a hard choice. Because when you just don't feel like doing anything and you just need to sit down and watch something, part of the process is deciding on what to watch, because you don't want to get something that you have to get too involved in. Yeah. You want to get something that's familiar, but not too familiar, that you've seen too many times. So there's one movie though. Well, there's a lot of movies for me, but there's a few movies I can watch over and over and over again. Or if it's on TV, I can just tune in to it.
You see it and you're like, yeah, I'm going to watch it. I get you. Yep.
For me, that movie is Legally Blonde.
Oh, great movie.
Legally Blonde, just when I'm in a funk, there's just so many quotable parts. And I guess that's what it's really about for me, is movies that have quotable lines that really make me laugh and raise my spirits. So Legally Blonde for me is one of those. Mean Girls.
Just the first one? Just the first one of Legally Blonde? Or like, are you happy with the sequel?
I'm such a big fan of the first one that I wasn't disappointed with the sequel, but yeah. It wasn't exactly what I would have liked to have seen, but a lot of people liked it. So
yeah, I thought
and
that was fun.
Speaking of, there's a weird kind of straight direct to streaming or straight to video, however you say it, spin-off, like third version of it. But it's been officially announced.
Yes, yes.
That she's on board to actually do a legit third part to the Legally Blonde series.
And I'm really excited about this because I think she has had such a solid career since then, that for her to be on board with this, it must be good, you know?
Well, and it's going to have to. Yeah. I mean, so, and the thing is that she's working. Reese Witherspoon works. She's on Pretty Little Liars. She's on Fires, whatever that Netflix show is. Mm. What is it? Fires Carter? No.
Twisted Fires. Fires. That's it. You got it. Yeah.
But she works, you know, and she's good. She's America's sweetheart. Or she was.
She was, yeah, like around the Sweet Home Alabama kind of time. That was kind of what they were like touting the movie as. You know, watch it because it's got America's sweetheart. Yeah, but she's great. I think you'd be hard pressed finding someone who isn't great, who thinks she isn't great.
It would. She's fantastic. So for movies, that's it. But for another series, I have to say, and you're not going to be surprised, but it's from the 80s.
Yeah,
called The Golden Girls. Another series. That I own the complete DVD collection.
Do you? I agree.
But it's also available on streaming platforms, so it's great.
That show is so cozy to watch because you've got that retro feel, but also the nostalgia. And also for us, like when it was on, we were kids. And I don't know about you, but I remember my grandmother used to watch it. So I used to think it was a show for old people as a kid. But then, you know, it's constantly been on reruns in the afternoons and evenings, you know, the whole way. I think it's like Friends. I don't actually think it's ever gone off air. But to watch it at different periods in your life, you get different stuff until suddenly you realize this is not a show for old people. This is a show for everyone because it is hilarious. Those women are hilarious. Great show.
Well, the acting is amazing. The writing is top notch. I mean, it ages so well. No pun intended that it's about older people, but it has aged really well. It's timeless. It's classic. The jokes are always funny. And one of the reasons they aged so well is because if you're a fan of the show, you know they talked about so many topics that were ahead of their time.
Absolutely.
Topics that we're still dealing with today. And so it's very ahead of its time in that way. And it's very comforting. I mean, and it's just the deliveries, the comedic timing, just everything is so perfect about it. I love it so much. I've heard some things about possibly rebooting it, but kind of in a different way.
Yeah.
In a different way. Not the same show, but a version of it. So I'm fine with that. I think they need to just leave Golden Girls alone. There's just no way you could ever. Although there was a, I guess it would be called a spinoff. Now, how popular is Golden Girls in Australia? Because like you said, we watched it as kids up here. It would come on after the after school cartoons. It'd be like the first adult type.
Yeah, I'd say that's kind of the same thing. It was a popular show for sure. And I think you'd be hard pressed finding someone who, you know, was in Australia around that time who doesn't know the Golden Girls.
Well, it's really popular here. In fact, it's beloved. It's just, I don't think there's anybody who hates that show or dislikes or really has anything bad to say about it.
Yeah, yeah.
The theme song is amazing. Just sitting down. Thank you for it's awesome. That's the best part. And the fact that it's in Miami. But what I was going to say is when I was a kid, I couldn't fully appreciate the show because there's some basic humor, but there's also some adult humor.
Absolutely.
And at times there can be some dark humor in it too. So you really get a nice selection of everything. But like you said, watching it now in contrast to watching it as a kid, I enjoy the show just as much, but from a different perspective. So in kind of a different way as an older person. And
agreed.
that's why it's on my list as a comfort show, because I'm hoping that, you know, when I'm, God willing, 80, 70, however old I make it to see, I'm still watching The Golden Girls and I'm watching it and I'm identifying them.
Yeah.
Finally, it's going to be that full circle moment because it's going to be like, okay, now I'm an old person watching this. Here I am.
I identify with Sophia. Like
it's almost going to be like a how-to. And as a matter of fact, as I watch it, I'm like, wow, I wonder, you know, when I'm in that age category, if I'm going to be that active or if I'm going to be doing this. So I just love it. I can't say enough good things about the Golden Girls. And they had a spinoff. And I went on a tangent, which is not new for me. But what I wanted to just go over with you is the popularity. There was a spinoff because it was so popular here. I know they performed for the Queen as well.
Yeah, right.
In England.
Really?
Yeah, they did a live performance for the Queen at the Queen's request. So it was a hugely popular show, but there was a spinoff called The Golden Palace. And the Golden Palace.
I have vague recollections of this. Is it like, did they own a hotel or they lived in it? Was there something about that? Did it have everyone in it?
Okay, well, the reason the show ended, because Golden Girls, like Friends, wasn't canceled. It ended because Beatrice Arthur, who played Dorothy on the series, was interested in leaving the show. So basically it was the entire cast with some new characters. Don Cheadle was in it.
Really?
And but just minus Beatrice Arthur, or B. Arthur, who arguably is one of the funniest roles. So is it as good? I don't know. It's really hard to find. That I do know. On streaming services here, it's almost impossible to find. It's like the hidden season. But
interesting.
I know if you look online, and I encourage you and all your listeners to do it, is go on to YouTube and put in the Golden Palace. And there's an episode where Bea Arthur comes back and she reprises her role as Dorothy in the new series. And when they all get together, it's the best. And it's one of the best episodes. And yes, they own a hotel and Beatrice Arthur is working as a server in a restaurant. And it's so funny. If you can take what I've just given you and go to YouTube
and do your
research and watch that, you're going to be LMAO or laughing your ass off. I promise you. So do it.
Oh, wow. I had completely forgotten that was even a thing. So, yeah, I'm gonna go and watch that again and probably watch some Golden Girls as well later. So the show, or I should say the other comfort movie that I wanted to talk about, because I rewatched it this week. I hadn't seen it for years either, which was weird. But the original, the first Mighty Ducks movie.
Ooh.
Can I tell you?
90s.
It's so 90s. And it holds up.
Sure.
It really does. It made me remember that Emilio Estevez, it felt like he was in everything for a while there. And I think that was almost like his pinnacle role of that time, where he was still the young guy, but he was like a mentor to the up and comers. And it's on, I saw it on Disney Plus, and it's got a great soundtrack. It is such.
Let's be honest. So, as far as Disney's movies go, I mean, what Disney movie doesn't have a great soundtrack?
Yeah, that's
true.
That
movie was all the rage on the playground growing up.
Oh, man. The hairdos, the outfits, and even to the point where some of the actors, you're like, I forgot you were in it, and I've seen you in this, 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 and this. It's really cool. Like the other coach for the Hawks, I am almost convinced he was the editor in chief, like the chief editor for The Adventures of Lois and Clark, Lois and Clark, the Adventures of Superman. I'm sure it's the same guy.
Oh, he played, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
His name right now.
I'm sure it's him. I'm sure it's the same guy. But they made three of them. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, isn't the redheaded kid from The Sandlot also in The Mighty Ducks?
He was also.
And I think that was part of the big appeal at the time, because he was very famous in, as far as in the Disney world and in kids movies, kids theatrical releases.
Theatrical.
A famous actor in the 90s. He was everywhere.
And there was another kid in it who I'm sure played one of the Petes in Pete and Pete, if you remember the Nickelodeon show Pete and Pete. I'm sure he was in it. Of course, that was the first place we saw Joshua Jackson, who went on to play Pacey in Dawson's Creek.
Yes.
Marguerite Mordeau, something like that. And she's like the first girl who's already in the Mighty Ducks team. But she was also in, of course, stuff like Wet Hot American Summer, like all of those.
So when I say, okay, no cheating, kind of like a quiz.
Yes.
When I say D2, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
The fact that they were somehow the team for America. They were Team America. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. I'm like, really? Like, okay.
That's good. And maybe it was lost in translation, because over here, when you think of D2, at least when I think of D2, that was the tagline for the sequel of The Mighty Ducks. It said, D2, The Mighty Ducks are back. You don't remember that?
You said that perfectly.
That was the tagline. It was a huge movie. D2, The Mighty Ducks are back.
Like you could easily be doing a commercial for, I don't know, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 game. Yeah, like perfect. That was a perfect 90s voiceover there. I appreciated that.
I'm telling you, I remember it like it was yesterday. It is fresh in my head. D2, The Mighty Ducks are back. Yeah, no, that movie was legit. Like
great
that
movie.
Was a childhood favorite. I think anybody who's even around our age at all knows about that movie. Oh, yeah. And that's probably on everybody's comfort movie list.
Quack, quack, quack. Look, Heath, have you got any other comfort stuff before we get into the Would You Rather?
No, I'm excited about the Would You Rather. Let's go.
Fantastic. All right, this is called Would You Rather Returns, because last week was the Would You Rather sequel, so now I've got to continue the tradition of naming it.
So this is the trilogy.
This is a trilogy, yeah, and then I'll do the prequel probably next week. All right, so
I love trilogies.
Well, you're in the final. It's the best of them all.
I made it.
Would You Rather. Would you rather watch a Hunger Games or a Harry Potter marathon watch? Like, sit down, get through the whole lot.
Harry Potter.
Now that's a big investment, because there are a lot more of those movies. So I'm impressed with that answer for sure. I think I'd go Hunger Games. I never ended up seeing the last Hunger Games, so I'm kind of it's the only reason why I would do it. Okay, what would you like to order when you go back to the movie theater, when you go to the cinema? So it's not really a would you rather this or that. It's what are you going to order?
Like, what's my order? What's my typical order?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I am a very frugal individual myself, so I try not to just splurge and go crazy at the movie theater, because as we all know, the movie theater snacks and concessions can be very expensive.
Absolutely. It can almost be more than the ticket itself.
Yes. But in a pinch, you know, there's a movie that's big enough and I don't have a snack, or I forgot to sneak one in, so I have to go to the concession stand.
Yep.
And 9 times out of 10, I'll order a Slurpee.
Ah, nice. Flavor?
So Slurpees, they have them, right?
Yeah. We call them Slurpees or like frozen Coke or whatever. But what flavor do you grab?
Usually the movie theaters don't have a huge selection, but probably something like a cherry or a Coke. Yeah. I like all.
Can you mix them? Like, do they allow you to mix them or not? Like, can you have a half cherry, half?
For me, you could. I'm just not the type of person who wants to hold up a line and have like a custom order. Yeah. And I really like both flavors, so either one is fine with me. I'm not picky.
Fair.
So, yeah, if there wasn't a huge line and the clerk had a little extra time, I might ask him to mix it up a little bit. Mm. But what's cool about theaters in Las Vegas, at least when they were open, is that you can actually get cocktails at some of the theaters. So, in some cases, there are cocktail movies. I remember I had a cocktail when I saw the movie Iron Man, the first one that came out.
I was going to say a perfect cocktail movie that I'm trying to think recently, but it was probably a year ago now. I would imagine a good cocktail movie would have been something like Hustlers. You know, the J-Lo movie?
That would have been a big one. Cocktail.
Yeah.
It would have been a great cocktail movie, yeah. Yeah, so that's for drink. So either an icy or a cocktail if the cocktails are available.
Yeah.
And then for snacks, since I'm there, I got to get a snack because I'm going to want one. So it's either going to be the popcorn.
Yep.
Movie theater popcorn, I never feel as sick as I do when I'm done eating it, but it just goes down so good. It goes down. I mean, you're just there in the theater and you're eating it.
Sometimes you don't even know you're eating it. Like, your hand just automatically is feeding your mouth with the popcorn. I remember I had popcorn once in a theater. I can't remember. Maybe it was Taos, New Mexico, or maybe it was Santa Fe. Beside the point.
Somewhere in New Mexico.
Somewhere over there, because we wanted to go and see a movie. And we were like, butter? Yeah, that sounds delicious. So I overzealously put this butter on, and I ruined the popcorn for myself before I even started eating it. I've learned I don't like that butter.
They use here they use oil butter.
Yeah, it's almost like a ghee or something. Oil. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you pour it on the popcorn, the popcorn starts to shrink and almost disintegrate. So it really, you got to do it right.
I was inexperienced. I didn't know what I was doing, and it was a rookie mistake, that's for sure. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the popcorn when I go and see a movie. I think because I don't really have popcorn that much at any other time. I like it. I just don't think about it. You know what I mean?
Same.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about Madonna earlier in the podcast.
Yeah.
Madonna, supposedly her thing, I've been looking into some of her work in the studio, because that's fascinating to me when recording artists are in the studios, all the stories. But it's just something I do for fun. But anyway, so she used to always make bags of popcorn. She likes to snack on popcorn.
Yeah, right.
I don't think it's the greasy, buttery.
I don't think she'd go the pop. No,
but
there's
like
no
the
way.
Microwavable kind.
Yeah, right.
So she's a big popcorn fan. So I'd get some popcorn in order of Madonna, or in honor of Madonna, and then I would do probably some Sour Patch Kids.
Oh yeah.
Because first they're sweet, then they're sour.
So you get it's two for one. Perfect. You've thought about this. I'm very impressed.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Would you rather read the book or watch the movie?
Is there more to this question? Like, no. Are you going to give me options?
I'll give you examples. We can refer to the two film franchises from earlier. Would you rather read The Hunger Games or watch the movie or movies?
Ooh. Okay, well, for Harry Potter, I'd rather watch the movies because, like you said, there's so many books.
So many of them.
And they're so long. They're thick.
Yeah.
For Hunger Games, I don't know. I would. Okay. Oftentimes in history, in the history of me being around,
yes,
I've heard that the book is a lot of times it's better than the film.
Yeah.
So I like to start with the film and then
you
if
go
I like the
back
film,
to the book.
Because that way I'm not disappointed. Because if I read the book and I love the book and
that's
then the film isn't up to par, I'm going to be disappointed. But if I go in fresh with a clean slate film and then I read the book and kind of get a more in-depth version of what I just watched, characters set in my mind, I already have some of the scenes in my mind. So it actually is like more – the book is more of a companion to the movie in that sense. So that's my – I would always rather watch the movie first. And then if I like
– I don't mind that because usually I would go the other way. But, I mean, now I've got Hunger Games in my head because I saw the first movie before I read all of the books. And I had Katniss in my head – well, Jennifer Lawrence, I should say. But – The book was better because it gave more context. And I think if I had watched the film before then, I would have been disappointed. Yeah, I think that's a solid way to go about it. Geez, you're clever, Heath.
It's worked for me. And, you know, I'm just sharing what I know. This is what I like to do. This is the order.
This is perfect.
I'm going to leave it.
Taking
it may
notes.
Not work for you, but I definitely will support you if you choose to watch the movie first.
Great. Fantastic. do you prefer subtitles or a foreign film or TV show dubbed into English?
Oh.
Mm.
I am a big fan of subtitles, often on English spoken films, just because I like to see words.
Yep.
And I like to know what they say because sometimes you mishear things and you don't want to rewind the movie. So it's nice. I am a fan of subtitles on English shows, but when it comes to foreign films, that is just this extra layer of work that I don't want to do when I'm relaxing.
Yeah. Right.
So no, I have to have a dubbed film.
Yep.
It has to be dubbed because I can't. It's just so much work. I have to read and try to pick up all the scenes in the movie and
you're
all
reading
stuff.
The book. Reading the book and watching the movie at the same time.
At the same time, yes. And I already told you I like to watch the movie first. Don't bring both at me at the same time.
Fair enough.
It's more. It's definitely more work, and it takes you out of the universe of what you're watching as well.
I think it depends because the only reason I put that one in is because I finished watching the Spanish hit show, Money Heist. Sorry, I've caught up, I should say, recently. And I had the subtitles and the English dub on at the same time. And I noticed that they were both different. Particularly where, for example, you know how there are funny sayings in different languages. So maybe in English you would say, you throw the baby out with the bathwater, where like one, maybe the dubbed script, they were trying to translate it so it made sense in that like they were giving a context for English.
Right.
But the subtitles were just, I assume they're computer generated on streaming sites, that kind of, and it just didn't quite make sense. You're like, I don't know what that, anyway, I'll just skip over that and pretend it didn't happen. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. Okay. Would you prefer to watch on television a comedy special, so a stand-up comedy or a concert? So I don't know, Madonna.
Oh, I'm a music fan. For me, yeah. I'm a music lover. Concert. Oh, I mean, I love comedy. I love stand-up, but you know, there's very few stand-ups that actually can get through their whole performance.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to happen with music.
Yeah, for sure. I think about so many iconic concerts that I watched over and over and over again growing up, and I didn't really do that much with stand-up comedy. Skits, yes, comedy skits, absolutely, but not the stand-up comedy. So I think I'm with you on that one. Concerts, even though you're not getting the same feeling that you do when you're there live, I think that they can still be really spectacular, not only theatrically, but musically as well with what they do.
Concerts can be, that's actually, it's funny that you asked that question, because that is another comfort for me. There's a lot of different concert DVDs that I have that I'll just pop in because they're so multifaceted. You have to watch several times to pick up all the different going on. It's like sensory overload the first time you put in a Madonna DVD, because she's got flashing lights and props and dancers and all kinds of stuff. So you always tend to see something new every time you rewatch. And it's like that with a lot of concerts. Unfortunately, with a live band or with multiple artists or different talent on the stage, you can only focus on one person.
Yeah,
so normally that person is the singer. But it's fun to sometimes go back and just watch during the performance of one of your favorite songs that they do, and just maybe watch the bassist or just maybe watch the keyboardist and just really focus in on those elements of the song that you don't normally pay attention to. And I love that.
Concerts the whole way. All right, Heath, we're at the final one now. It's an easy one. It's usually in a would you rather, but I always like asking, would you rather have flying or invisibility superpowers?
Flying or invisibility. Okay. When I was a kid, I remember we had to do a school project and it was like, make a wish list.
Yeah.
And I remember writing that I wish I could fly. Now, as an adult, I know for a fact that I'm scared to death of heights.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so flying is not for me these days.
That'd be a nightmare.
Invisibility all the way, because I've thought about this. I have thought long and hard about this.
Perfect.
Knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. When you're invisible, you can be in a room with someone and they don't know you're there, and you're getting knowledge that you would get normally. And that would be such a gift.
If you had invisibility powers and you were in Game of Thrones, you would probably end up surviving till the very end.
Absolutely, because you'd know all the tea.
Yeah. Yeah. See, as a kid, that flying, like, I remember those flying dreams that you would have, and they just felt so freeing and exciting. And so for me, it's always been flying. But that invisibility thing does sound, or also, like, if you're at a party and you really want to go home, but like the people you're with are a bit more like they're a bit drunk and they're like, don't go home, just stay for another, and you're like, I don't want to, and you know, usually you got to do that thing where you go, I'm just going to go to the bathroom, I'll be back, and by bathroom I mean my bathroom at home, and I'm not coming back. But if you got invisibility, you just sort of like turn the corner, flip your invisibility on, they don't know where you are, you just go home.
You know, to get out of social settings, I didn't think of that, but that would be another useful. I mean, that's just it. Invisibility itself sounds boring. Mm. It just doesn't sound very exciting. But if you think about all the different things that you could do and all the different things you could really achieve by invisibility, I think invisibility is the winner. I mean, everybody wants to fly. Yeah. But I mean, it wouldn't really be that fun. It'd be cold up there.
It'd be cold, but also like
wind blowing in your face.
What happens if you get noticed? Then people are going to be like, oh, like, can you give me a lift? And you're like, no, I'm doing this by myself.
Yeah, like, what's that? And then what? God forbid the army military starts shooting, sending planes up to shoot you down.
Yeah.
I'm good on flying. I'll fly in an airplane, but I'll take my invisibility.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think you've swayed me on a few of those, particularly the invisibility one. Heath, once again, this has been so much fun to have you on the podcast as a guest again. I can't believe it's been over 6 months, but also I can, because this time has been strange.
Yeah, it's time definitely is not moving at the same rate.
No.
That the world is either moving or not moving these days. I'm such a fan of this podcast. I hope you guys just keep growing and get more and more listeners. And it's so fun being on. And it's one of my favorites. Podcasting is my new comfort media of choice. And it's something that really wasn't around. It used to be just like, you know, television, music, whatever. Yep. But podcasting is so cool because you can close your eyes and you can just focus and you can just listen to content. And it's amazing. I love it. I'm so honored to get to be a part of this. I love your show. I'm sorry Tom couldn't be here, and I can't wait to come back someday.
Well, you know, once you're on, you're a carryover champion, and we will insist you come back, and this has proven it. But yes, once Tom's back, we'll definitely have to get you back on, and we'll do another catch-up. Heath, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I just want to say a quick shout-out to all the listeners. Thank you for coming into this podcast today. It's been so much fun.
Yeah.
The drinking word was, what was it? Retro.
Retro.
And I'm going to do it one more time before I sign out. Ooh, why not?